Item number 22. From the Director of Audits, an audit report titled An Audit of Emergency Contract Extensions for Paratransit Services, negotiated by Milwaukee Transport Services, Inc. for a 3-year period effective November 1st, 2012.
Mr. Hare.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, on March 17th of this year, the Journal Sentinel wrote an article about the extension of a paratransit contract award that was done on an emergency basis, and they concluded that it cost the system, the county, $8.6 million more than if we'd gone with a presumptive winning proposal in a competitive bid process. The county comptroller and the county board both read that and had a lot of questions, directed that we conduct and review an audit of the situation surrounding the award of that, of those contracts, those two contracts. In the report, we lay out some background on paratransit for those of you who aren't familiar with it. I'm not going to get into that today. We also laid out the procurement process that MTS uses just as a point of information for you on how they go about obtaining goods and services. But today I'd like to just jump into the reason that MTS felt the need to enter into a 3-year emergency contract. Fundamentally, it came down to delays. There were delays in the procurement that put the system in a position where, in their view, and I think we would agree with it, the only option they had so late in the game was to actually provide the two vendors who had the contract for the last 5 years with the emergency contract extensions. I'll get into the details of those five key factors and delays. The first was a 23-day delay on the front end at MTS Inc. in the development of the specifications for this contract. Now, clearly, it's a contract we've been doing for 5 years, but when we look back at the time table that was used 5 years ago, when we looked at the time that was allotted by the transit management to develop the specs, we believe that was a 23-day delay in the process. The next substantive delay was 22 days that it took for our Office of Community Business Development Partners to identify the DBD goals on the contract. MTS, the bus system, it's a very heavily federally funded program, and even if it weren't, we as a government have made commitments to do DBD and do it right and do it well. So the process does involve moving through that office and getting a goal that can be useful in cultivating disadvantaged businesses within our community. That was another 22 days that it took to get that goal set. There was also a situation where the proposals had some glitches. Specifically, one vendor had signed two contradictory forms that were related to what the feds believe is a very important issue, and you may as well. That's the Buy America provisions that have been in effect for some decades now. And when MTS and MCDOT, Milwaukee County Department of Transportation, made a decision to ask the feds to weigh in on the impact of the vendor's error, I don't believe that they anticipated that it would take 52 days to get that answer from FTA. Now, while that 52 days was pending, the process did move forward. So at the end of the day, it was really 22 days of real delay because they were ready to go. They were 30 days into their FTA approval or information request, and it took them another 22 days to get the answer from the feds. Toward the end of the process, after the situation with the vendors had been resolved, there was also a 10-day delay for appeals by a vendor. The 10 days was really, it really played out because MTS Inc. and MCDOT wanted to get some input from the community, from the clients, and we don't have any issue with that. That's the kind of thing that when you're on a timetable that could cost you money, it could maybe be done in a couple of days with good proper public notice under the statute and not 10 days. What cuts across all of these delays is a flaw in the contract itself and in the procurement process itself, and that is the lack of a continuation clause. When you get up against a wall with vendors and what you really need is an extension, but your contracts don't allow for an extension and continuation of services, very sensitive services to very needy clients, well, you're in a situation where you don't have a lot of options. Moving on now to the fiscal effect of this, the newspaper was right. It's $8.6 million. Now, we know that subsequent to the award of the contract, the ridership trend has trended down a little bit more. So ultimately, maybe we get to the point where that exposure is only in the range of $7.9 million. But mathematically, they got it right. By having to extend on a three-year emergency basis with terms that were essentially negotiated, I was going to say dictated, but they were negotiated with the two contractors, we will end up spending between $7.9 and $8.6 million more than had we been able to go with the presumptive winner of the competitive procurement process. We think that there are a number of things that need to be done differently going forward. We've made eight recommendations to you. Seven of them go to process, and one goes to working with Corp Counsel to see if there's a way to mitigate some of the damages done by this three-year contract extension. Fundamentally, the line of accountability and authority and reporting between MTS, Inc. and MCDOT was too blurry at a couple of key points with regard to context, especially externally with the FTA and internally with our own Office of Community Business Development Partners. So that ambiguity in the relationship between MTS, Inc. and MCDOT needs to be clarified so that ultimately somebody is responsible for making sure that things get done on time. As to the ability to limit our damages, you know, this is not going to be a very easy thing to achieve because, once again, we're in a situation where we can't just cut off the service or threaten to even do so. These are clients who need that service. But we do think that there are a couple of things worth exploring with Corporation Counsel, and so we've recommended that. Subsequent to the issue of this report, a few other items have been raised by other county employees that may be worth considering. So we really encourage you to support all recommendations, including having MCDOT come back to you based on conversations and work with Corp Counsel to come up with a way to potentially limit the damage here. I'll stop there, Mr. Chairman. If you have any questions.
I have several questions, and I have certain other committee members do too. You mentioned an extension clause in the previous contract. Is there an extension clause in the emergency contract?
No. There are notice provisions. They're different for each of the contractors, and we've actually appended the entirety of the emergency contract. So you can see that one has
the same problem could arise in 3 years, potentially.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Do you know who knew what when? I mean, were people from MTS talking to people at MCDOT saying we're having this trouble, and did they get any sign-off from people at MCDOT saying go ahead with this three-year emergency contract?
Well, for the most part, we are clear as to what happened when, but there are a couple of key points.
Are or not?
For the most part, there is clarity about who knew what when, who did what when, but some of these are very, very key. For instance, a big one was the FTA. There is some disagreement about whose idea it was to wait for the FTA versus go forward, and that was 52 days of this. Now, I know it's 22. At the bottom line, it's 22 because the process continued, but if either one of these wouldn't have happened, we wouldn't have been in the situation, either the CBDP or the FTA. But to your point, that's why we need greater clarity in the contract so that if something does get dropped, we know who dropped it and we can find out why. I'm sorry, there's another aspect of your question?
Well, I guess also was there ever some discussion among
yes.
the key players
yes.
about how long an emergency contract should be?
Well, Mr. Chairman, the documentation shows that as of October 11th, it looked like we would be in a situation where there would be a one-year extension. And by October 12th, it had moved out to a three-year extension, and it stopped there. I mean, that's where the negotiations ended. Fundamentally, what we're told here is that at that point, the vendors were in the driver's seat. They were dictating terms. The commitment was made to not disrupt service. And they said 3 years. We took 3 years.
Is it possible for you to put calendar dates on this rather than 23, 24?
Oh, absolutely. Actually, if I could, again, this gets to be a little bit detailed, but starting on page 13, we did lay out a timeline. So, for example, the conversation that we were just having relates to The bottom of page 21 and the top of page 22, that time frame from October 11th to 12th. And I apologize. Our timeline with the comptroller was April 15th. We know that you guys haven't had a lot of time to look at this, but we tried to lay that out on page 21 and 22, the timeline on the decision to go to 3 years. Mr. Jenkins has just reminded me that there was one provider that did agree to a 1 year, and then when the other went to 3 years, they both went to 3 years. And a lot of this was being done by the lawyers. I mean, you had asked earlier, Mr. Chairman, about the legal fees. If you like, I could touch on that briefly. The counsel for MTS, Inc. at that point was Quarles and Brady. The contract that you saw on Mr. Mansky's report this morning was with Foley and Lardner, and that was Director Busilaki's contract with Foley and Lardner to look at the management contract with MTS Inc. for purposes of developing the RFP, which you've subsequently become aware of. It will be going out imminently. So that was for MTS Inc. management services. They used Quarles and Brady in these negotiations. It's our understanding that the cost of that was somewhere just this side of low side of $15,000.
Mr. Chair, supervisors, I just want to be very clear.
If you look on the time, yourself for the record?
Doug Jenkins, Deputy Director of Audits. If you look on the timeline on pages 20 and 21, it's very clear that around the 10th, 11th, and 12th of October, there's virtually around-the-clock negotiations. At that point, MTS was very hopeful of coming to an agreement with First Transit, the presumptive winner of the 3-year contract. They were hopeful of coming up with a 1-year extension agreement on a temporary basis until the appeals process played out, and then presumptively that it would have the 3-year contract that they proposed intact. Those started unwinding when First Transit started demanding additional concessions and changes in with the delays. They wanted changes from their proposal, and once that became clear, they weren't able to consummate that deal because that would have been illegal. That would have been basically setting aside the entire proposal process, which is already under appeal. So it would have been not legally defensible. At that point, and that was for one vendor for the entire Milwaukee County service area. That's when MTS felt they had to go back and Transit Express, the vendor that was appealing the process, they had insisted all along on a 3-year extension, and so they were back to that, and fearing a disruption of service, then they negotiated quickly 3-year contracts with each to retain the service area that they had, essentially about half of the county each.
And Mr. Chairman, there were some conclusions that people were reaching that Transit Express had essentially exploited the situation and that they were the ones that were kind of holding things up. But as this process played out, as Mr. Jenkins has described, First Transit got engaged as well in cutting the best possible deal for themselves. Now, to me, that's not a blame thing. Businesses are going to act in their own best interest. It's up to us to make sure that we've got a process in place that doesn't put us in a situation like this. So it was clear that they both were aware of the vulnerability of our situation, and they both exploited it to their advantage.
I don't want to monopolize. I just have one last question. At any point, do you as auditors feel that someone should have come forward publicly to say and make it, have the policymakers make a decision? Do you want to delay these services for a month if that happens and inconveniences people, or do you want to spend $8 million to keep it?
Well,
is that simply a decision that MTS should make and say it's not their money?
No, Mr. Chairman, that question, you're going to allow me to make very clear one of the recommendations. The current contract between the county and MTS Inc. puts the contract administrator, MCDOT, in a position where MTS Inc. has to inform them of an emergency contract award. What we're recommending is that that be reported out to you as the Board of Directors, and that it be dealt with just like any other emergency purchase of county government. There's an ordinance section, 32.28. It puts this board on notice. It becomes a public, hopefully, agenda item and discussion. And one can only speculate as to whether that would have made a difference in how this would have played out, but notwithstanding that, it's something that should happen. This contract is essentially to provide management services. In some governments, that's a department or division. Our belief is that it ought to be a situation where they're held to the same reporting standard as any department head of this government.
So under that scenario, we just would have been, it still would have occurred, and we'd be getting notice after the fact, much like the sheriff's notice today on that psychiatric contract, well, but we would have gotten it in October rather than in March.
Right. Unfortunately, the nature of an emergency is just that. Mm-hmm. And in this case, it was a contract that provided services to those in need. In other cases, we've had, you know, problems with buildings falling apart. And the idea of having a cycle or even an emergency meeting of a committee or a board, it has peril. I mean, there's a downside to that. If we don't remedy situations, bad things can happen. You know, I don't know that it would be such a bad idea to try and parse out life and limb versus other circumstances that could result in an emergency. And we're not here to tell you we've got all the answers in terms of whether or not there should have been or could be in the future more process, more transparency and involvement of policymakers. I find that intriguing because we were treating this as an emergency that should be reported and agendized. If you all have thoughts to kind of preempt that or get that further up in the process, we'd be happy to work with you or your staff to come up with alternatives. But it's that nature of an emergency that kind of puts it in an odd position.
Just want to follow up to that part, too, is that so MTS had Quarles and Brady as their attorney?
Yes.
And so we hired Quarles and Brady, and one of the problems, Quarles and Brady, and one of the problems identified was that there was no extension clause, and their attorneys didn't insert an extension clause or ask an extension clause be put in this emergency contract so we don't face this in the future?
Well, to the contrary, I think that the way the negotiations were going was all around hourly rates, productivity, and in the case of one vendor, termination clause. There was not a lot of movement toward how do we protect the county or the client or whatever. Short answer, yes, it appears that you're correct, Mr. Chairman.
Doesn't sound like they represented MTS that well in that situation. Supervisor Jerzyk?
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you for the audit. It's fast work and a very comprehensive audit in a very short time, so I appreciate your department. And I also want to say that I've met with Mr. Grant and some staff from MTS to try to understand all of these complications myself. And I think the one place I've gotten to is, and the reason for the emergency, is when they went out for the RFP process, they didn't do it early enough. And I would like to see in recommendations that there should be, and in this case, they were going from a contract that had been split, north side, south side, mm-hmm. and they knew they were going to be requesting getting rid of north side, south side, and having just one provider countywide. So you could pretty easily predict you're going to have one unhappy party at the end of the process. Somebody's going to lose a contract. And therefore, you need to plan very early that if you have an unhappy party, that you've got all the time necessary for appeals, for delays, et cetera. I think, for me, what I've come up with is the emergency existed because we didn't go out early enough to do the RFP process. And you should have known there were going to be problems because someone was going to lose a contract. That to me, really kind of backs it up and where I see the biggest problem. And I would like to see a solution to that. I think we have to have department heads who know that they're going to create a problem, that they leave enough time to really take care of the problems. You know, government does things with a lot of visibility. We have to do RFPs, et cetera. And people can criticize that, but that's the nature of the beast. We need to make sure that when we put into our requirements that we have all this, that we also have the time to do all that process. So I would like to see somehow that recommendation, and I don't know how you necessarily put that into your recommendation, but I'd like to see department heads be responsible for allowing enough time when they know they're going to have an unhappy party at the end of the day. So, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, I think that we're probably more general in our recommendation with regard to appropriate timelines for these types of procurements, but MCDOT, MTS have written very positive responses to the audit. Our suggestion would be that on the report back that, you know, where we made a recommendation that they have time frames that accommodate some of the challenges that they face, maybe we can get more precise in terms of their response to our recommendation. But they are supportive of it. They say they're going to do it. I guess on the follow-up part of this, if I can encourage you to make follow-ups part of whatever action you take today, we can get an update from them. And we can weigh in on whether we think it's going to solve the problem or not.
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, when you know you have these appeal times and you have an unhappy party, and believe me, attorneys do this all the time, you wait till the last possible moment before you do your request of an appeal, trying to play the system, if you will, because if you lose those time periods, you might have an opportunity then to take advantage of that. And I think that's partly what happened here. People knew that they were going to be able to take advantage of those time frames. And I just think you've got to prepare for those things, especially when you know someone's going to be unhappy.
We agree.
So
thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is not a new topic for me, unfortunately. As I believe you all have heard, I had a former constituent, unfortunately, passed away shortly after a paratransit ride last year. And that showed me that something was going on here that I did not know what. So I was trying to find out, Mr. Hare, more about the contracts that we had. And I was trying to get information on, you know, what they were. I knew they were about to expire. And most importantly, I wanted them to come back to the Transportation Committee. But every time I tried to find out information, even going through the good channels that we have access to, I found that I was barred from getting information.
Yeah.
That is, I feel very strongly about that, Mr. Hare. You know, I'm trying to help set good policy here for what's best for my constituents and the citizens of Milwaukee County and the whole freaking region, but we are being blocked from getting this. That is something there is wrong, I believe, Mr. Hare.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, first of all, to the point of quality of care with the clients, Supervisor Peggy Roma West is fully aware that we are engaged in an audit that she pushed for. We set that aside because the audit team that did this project this last month, Jim Feldy, Joe Williams, and Deanna Zhang, they were the best people to do this audit because they have been doing the audit of that relates to the quality of service and the underlying fraud controls. So you will get more information on that. To your specific point on these contracts, what we have here is a situation where the contracts are executed by a contractor. Milwaukee County hires MTS, Inc. under a management contract. Their job is to go out and procure goods and services. So the reason that you may not have seen contracts or RFPs even coming to you for your consideration is that that's what we hire MTS, Inc. to do. It's been that way since 1975. I wasn't around when that decision was made. But that is one of the outcomes of this is that, you know, they do procurement on behalf of Milwaukee County.
So then, if I understand you, Mr. Harris, then we would not have seen the RFP, the contracts, any of that stuff would not have come then to Transportation Committee?
That is correct. The only contract you would see would be the contract with the management services provider. Now, having said that,
yes,
after the process is complete, I think as an elected official or even as a citizen, you have the right to ask for certain documents. But while a contract would be pending, especially one where there's an appeal, you would not be given information.
Right. And I think that is very well justified, and as it should be. But I don't want to be perceived as interfering with the RFP.
Okay.
Well, that explains quite a bit to me. You know, it really bugged me to no end to find that I was unable to get this information. So what I thought was something really important, but you have answered that very clearly. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Gilroy Stamper.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm looking for the recommendations.
For the most part, they're way in that last section, starting on page 39 through 42. All eight of them are there.
Okay. Adequate time.
Yes, that's number four.
The process is very important to solve the problem. However, another key just as important is the provision in the contracts going forward that if we don't reach a contract due to the time, that they can't stop the service to the clients before another contract is in place.
Exactly.
So I like that has to be implemented in the new contracts because that's what caused for them to take advantage of the time. That's how they took advantage of us.
We agree. Yep.
The and time was up.
Absolutely. We also make a recommendation that emergency contracts be limited to a year. So between some stronger language on continuation of services while we're dealing with issues and a limit on an emergency, all of that would have contained the damage.
Okay. And in the negotiation between the attorneys, was there any negotiation on attorneys, us being able to get out of that three-year contract? And if there was a cost to it, then we may be stuck.
Well,
it's not worth it. We may be stuck and just have to
sale clauses.
Look to next time.
If you look at page 59, that is the emergency contract with First Transit. It goes to paragraph 6 is a buyout clause, liquidated damages. And then if you go to page on page 65, paragraph 11 is the Transit Express termination clause.
Can you give me the total? What would be the cost of that? Is there a cost?
No.
I saw $150,000.
Here's where it gets a little bit tricky because there is a damages buyout with the First Transit contract that is $150,000.
Okay.
But it it references other language from 07 that has to do with termination and the impact on their profit and closeout costs and an opportunity to cure if it's for default. There are two lawyers on the committee. I hope you'll agree with me that this is something that we need to get our lawyers, corporation counsel, involved in to vet out what our options, because I can tell you what the language is in the extensions from my viewpoint as somebody who is not a lawyer and never wanted to be one. But I think you're better served if our attorneys weigh in on this going forward.
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, there's a couple of complicating factors with that also. Remember, now we're back to two vendors with only half a service area. So now if you're able to terminate that contract with $150,000 plus buyout, now you've got to deal with Transit Express to expand service to the other half of the county. Because Transit Service, Transit Express, the only obvious out clause with them is a reduction or elimination of federal funding for this particular program. The other overarching concern is, again, no continuation. So if we were able to break both of these contracts, we're right back in the pickle that you're in to start with.
I forget which one won the contract.
First Transit was the presumptive winner to do. The RFP included opportunity to bid on all of the county or one piece of the county, the other piece of the county, or both. And they were the presumptive winning bid to do the whole county.
Right, okay. All right, so we're pretty much stuck.
Well, you know, I don't want to overstate what we believe is the likelihood of successfully mitigating these damages, but I think it's worth a shot, and that's why we recommend that you do so.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And looking at pages 39 through 40, I see the conclusions on the recommendations, and I would agree with them wholeheartedly. But what caught my eye is on pages 69 to 72, there's a DBE goal of 7%.
Yes.
And it looks as if First Transit was more toward that goal. And what's the other? Transit Express woefully fell down on the job as far as meeting the DBE goal. And it looks as if this DBE goal was consistent from 2008 through 2012. So I just wanted to bring that point out. Somebody needs to be cognizant of that, because with respect to our ordinances and what we try to do, and there are federal dollars involved, that we have to make sure that these goals are adhered to.
And, Mr. Chairman, that's one of the factors we think could be brought to bear with our attorneys in terms of whether or not there's compliance with the contracts we have with these vendors.
I guess I'll ask you this question because nobody else is registered to speak. You know, we had a situation a few months ago where the parks director was terminated for reasons still unknown to most of us, at least me. We had a Department of Transportation person relieved of their duties for reasons that are unknown to me. And now we have a close to $8 million mistake, which is hard to pinpoint who is responsible for. And there's been no action to take action against any employee for an $8 million mistake. And what are your thoughts on that? Who do you place responsibility on for this happening?
Mr. Chairman, I want to be very careful how I say this. Ultimately, we tend to hold the highest career professional responsible. In this case, it would have been the Director of Transportation. He has a contract with MTS, Inc., so they had an obligation to perform optimally under that contract as well. I don't know at all. I have no clue why the director who was in that position at the time is not in that position today. It's been pointed out that about October 19th, when all of this finally resulted in the communication that it's over, we had to do the three-year extension, that roughly corresponds to the departure of the previous director, but I don't know. I mean, there may be a lot of things going on there, but nor do I think it's my role to know. But I do know in this particular case, the director was aware of this right up and through, as I point out, the kind of round-the-clock flurry at the very end of the negotiations. Sometimes it's not possible to just say this person dropped the ball, because we develop procedures, we develop protocols, we share responsibility for doing things. It's like the right fielder and the left fielder going after a ball, and if it's right in between the two of them, one of them better call it out. When nobody calls it out,
center fielder at that point.
Yeah. Well, I don't mean to be glib or get into sports analogies, but I think that ultimately it's you hire us as professionals to provide a certain level of service. We hire consultants, contractors, vendors to provide a certain level of service, and the lack of clarity about who had to do what when, it led to some problems. Why would it? We tend to look internally as well, but why does it take the FTA, 50 plus days to answer a fairly simple question? And I'm sure it's a question that they've come across before. We are not the first place where a vendor ticked two boxes on a form the wrong way. And in terms of trying to pin down responsibility for some of the delay within the Office of Community Business Development Partners, we made a conscious decision not to reach out to the former director of that office. She was let go sometime in July last year. The delay in that office was sometime in May. I don't know why it sat on her desk for nearly 3 weeks. It is a collective of all those things, though. If this was just somebody, one person making a bad call, but when you've got the FTA, the CBDP, a lack of clarity about whose job it is to follow up on those two, and it all does add up. Even the 10-day timetable on the appeal.
Internal
the internal delays within MTS Inc. on the front end. There's plenty of blame, if you want to use that word, to go around. We tend to look at it as our job to figure out how to stop it from happening again, and if there's something we can do to cure it now, that's where we focus. I wish I could be more definitive. I wish there was a smoking gun, but there clearly was not in this case.
No, I appreciate your report. Supervisor Bowen, did you have a question or comment?
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to speak in the mic so we can follow our rules here. I have a question for audit when it comes to having contracts that are either too big or services that are too vital, and I guess vendors taking advantage of that. Is that a problem? Is this going down the same road as too big to fail in a way?
Mr. Chairman, I would suggest that, especially if you're looking at one countywide vendor contract, we certainly could get in a situation where it could be too big to fail. If we were in a situation 3 years from now, 5 years from now, with we've got just this one vendor and there's an issue, it could be too big to fail. But this isn't the only vulnerable client base that we serve as a government. We've got a lot of people with severe needs. And I think our best way to serve those needs without a break in service is to have good contract language, good out clauses, good extension of service language, you know, maybe more transparency or oversight on developing proposals and entering into contracts, clearly more daylight. But I've always said that there are things that people do to us and there are things that we let people do to us. I expect businesses to act in their own interest. So we have to be forewarned and forearmed and protect our ability to provide services at the best cost. It's up to us to fix the process.
Thank you. And further follow-up, I don't know if this was already explained, was there confirmation from FTA of what caused their delay? They were contacted, and it seems like they were contacted again. And the second time they were contacted, we got a direct answer right away in trying to figure out what that delay was.
There were numerous contacts where FTA had a statement of what was going on. It's being reviewed. First of all, it's being drafted. No, let me back up. We have questions. Okay, we got the answers. It's being drafted. It's being reviewed. We'll get back to you. There's a trail of some of the interaction we had with them. Ultimately, could we or should we have pushed harder earlier? Probably. But no, we didn't audit the FTA. I would love to do that, but it may jeopardize our funding if I. That's not why we didn't look at it either. We just we put the burden ourselves to anticipate these delays.
Definitely. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Do you, as an auditor, have any opinion on whether or not the fact that this is contracted out, and so that MTS isn't really responsible for the dollars, as say an elected body and an elected county executive is, to be responsible for it? That they just didn't care as much or didn't take as good a care. I mean, I haven't read these two contracts line by line, but the fact that First Transit agreed to such a seemingly better out clause from the county's perspective than Transit Express does, leads me to believe that somebody didn't even care what this contract said, but they just sort of signed them. So is it just like, we want to get this done, sign it and be done, and but they don't have to answer to taxpayers like those of us who are elected to?
Mr. Chairman, it's never been my impression that anybody working at MTS Inc. in management doesn't know or doesn't care. I would suggest that given the magnitude of the expense of that operation, it would be a good idea for some of that information about what is done and how it's done and when it's done to be more readily available to you. And this is a situation where we're saying they need to tell you when something like this is happening. Yes, another element of what we think you should know isn't just that we're doing this, but how much it would cost. I mean, there was a notice sent out to elected officials that this is going to happen. But if that notice were coming from a department head, it would have had another sentence. It would have said, and this is how much it's going to cost. So I don't know if it's a lack of caring or if it's a lack of expectation and clarification of what you as electeds, what we who work here should have from the vendor for information. You know, they've bought a lot of stuff for us over the years, and I've been auditing over there since 83, off and on. I don't recall them ever doing anything like this, but clearly it has consequence, and clearly the consequence was not communicated to you all when the emergency contracts were entered into.
It just appears that we as a body look impotent, the county executive looks impotent. When he goes on public or we go on public and somebody says, what are you doing about this $8 million boondoggle? We're basically saying, nothing. We can't do anything.
Well,
we can rectify it going forward, but we can't fix it, and no one's responsible. And I think it makes all of us look bad.
I don't disagree with that. I think that's a long shot. I think that we can enlist their help in trying to mitigate some of this, but I don't disagree with your characterization at all.
Supervisor Alexander?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm curious. When I spoke with management from MTS, I was pretty angry when the news story broke, and I said, I don't understand how a three-year contract is an emergency, an answer to an emergency. One-year contract, six-month contract, maybe an 18-month contract, I could probably see. But I said, 3 years seems unreasonable to me. What if they had been twisting your arm for 10 years? Mm-hmm. And they said, maybe they got together and said, let's only offer a 10-year contract. How would you have responded? And the answer I received was, I don't think they would have done that. And what would you have recommended that I do, Supervisor? And without going through my quick response to that, that put the conversation in its place, I'm curious to the auditor's opinion as to whether or not, if the vendors had been asking for a 10-year contract in this emergency situation, if there is anything in place that would have precluded MTS management from agreeing to that.
Mr. Chairman, it's my belief that there's nothing that limits the extent of an emergency contract in our agreement with MTS Inc. It just says we have to be notified. The Director of Transportation has to be notified when there's an emergency contract. The initial inquiry was for a two-month extension. That was the inquiry from MTS staff to the vendors. Presumptive winner was more than happy to take a two-month extension. I mean, of course, what's a few more months before they could get the whole county? But as this thing morphed out to 1 year, then 3 years, and I should say that it became very clear that the conversations between MTS and the former director of McDOT were all about not disrupting service. And I get that. That has to be a huge factor, if not the most important factor. But to know what the cost would be and to communicate that to folks like you, that was a part that that would have been nice to have that months ago instead of picking up a newspaper and reading about it. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm also curious. I have read through the audit report, but I want to make sure memory is serving correctly. That part of the potential recommendations in the audit report are to review if the contracts were between the vendors and MTS, right, if potentially severing the relationship between Milwaukee County and MTS as a management organization would be a route to invalidate those contracts. Did I understand that correctly?
Yes. We think it's important for Corp Counsel to weigh in on whether or not the contract between MTS Inc. and the two contract service providers are transferable to any successor arrangement or firm.
Thank you. And also, Mr. Chairman, I'm curious, within the scope of the audit, did the auditors speak with the other contract bidders who had not been awarded the contract to determine what the truth was around the idea of who could have stepped in and provided service, who could not have, which conversations or phone calls may have taken place or not taken place, because we were given conflicting stories between MTS and what the vendors themselves were reporting. Mm-hmm. And I have in my official capacity been contacted by some of the losing vendors and told that they were not only contacted by MTS but not contacted within the scope of the audit.
Right. Mr. Chairman, that's true. One of the things Mr. Mansky is very concerned about is the, in addition to all the issues we've talked about here, is the whole process of evaluating, scoring, and awarding the contract itself, that timetable that was it was in the evaluation phase. And we looked at all the documentation that was submitted with the proposals, subsequent to the pre-proposal, the evaluation panels, scoring, and the outcome. And I know there were issues from other proposers, but we were satisfied that that part of the process had integrity. It stood up. Now, we had a concern about throwing out the highest and lowest score. We don't have a problem with it. It just wasn't identified as part of the process. But all other aspects of the process stood up to our scrutiny in terms of what we expect from a contract of this magnitude and what we expect from an evaluation and from the interchange between MTS Inc. and the vendors.
And, Mr. Chairman, that answer seemed to speak to the RFP process.
Right.
What about once in the middle of October when that appeal was going mm-hmm. on and MTS was really scrambling to find a way to ensure there was service coverage, and there were supposedly vendors saying, yes, we can provide service, but MTS's report was that they could not.
Yeah.
And there's no – I never saw documentation of this. It seemed to be hearsay, but what is the auditor's opinion
well,
on that?
And here's – this that's a great question, because here's what this really broke down to. Where MTS ended up was, instead of pursuing the contracts that were subject of the proposal, which may or may not include other vendors as primes or subs or partners, the decision was made to do an emergency extension with the two existing vendors. And at that point, any consideration of any involvement from other vendors kind of just fell off, because the focus was, we're dealing with these two current vendors, they're keeping their same zones, A and B, north and south, and we're just doing the three-year extension. And then the rest was all about rates and productivity. But there would have been perhaps an opportunity earlier on that had passed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any other questions for the auditor? Supervisor Jerzyk? Well,
and Mr. Hare is an auditor, not an attorney. And we're talking about these extensions and contracts. Is there going to be a review by legal counsel? It strikes me that this is a situation which may call for equitable relief, whether the parties that participate in the delay come to the table with clean hands and so on. Is any of that being requested or reviewed?
Mr. Chairman, as I mentioned briefly, the Director of Transportation and the Managing Director of MTS agree with all eight of our recommendations, 100%. Director Dranzik has indicated that he will work with Corp Counsel and with the FTA, for that matter, to try and find whatever options we have available to the county. And that's clearly going to involve interaction with the two vendors that are the recipients of this three-year emergency contract.
So if they do find that there may be a way to proceed, I assume we're going to get that back.
Mr. Chair, again, if you are receptive to a status report on these eight recommendations, the resolution we have drafted for you has you concurring with the recommendations. We'd also like to have a status report come back to you in terms of all eight recommendations and the progress that is made in implementing them.
I think that's a good suggestion. Anything else for our auditors? Thank you for your fine work.
Thank you.
Do you need a motion?
Oh, well, I was just going to ask if anybody, no one else has filled out a card to speak. Is there anybody else who wishes to speak on this that's here today?
I guess not. So make a motion to concur with all the eight recommendations that everyone has been.
We have a resolution.
Yeah.
So
for approval?
Yes.
Because it does say concur.
Yes.
Right. We all have a copy of the resolution, and Supervisor Schmidt has moved adoption of the resolution.
Mm-hmm.
Any discussion of that? If not, would you take the roll?
Supervisors Haas?
Aye.
Schmidt?
Aye.
Loma West?
Aye.
Jurcic?
Aye.
Lipscomb?
Aye.
Alexander?
Aye.
Stamper?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Mr. Chair?
Aye.
Motion to approve, 9-0. And the last item is item number 21.
Yes.